With over 30 million people in the U.S. fighting a rare disease, we can't ignore the effect this has on all of us. Often we feel society defines us by the disease instead of who we are as a person. Join hosts and advocates Anne and Seth as they navigate topics impacting these communities, as well as guest speakers with their own rare disease expertise. Rare Unplugged is about to get real.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Rare Unplugged. Anne here, and I've got Seth with me. Hey, Seth.
Hey, what's happening? I'm excited to be back and have another episode today.
Yeah, same here. We've got a super cool guest. He's actually one of my favorite new people that I've been following on Twitter lately, so I'm really excited to bring him on.
That's awesome. Yes, I actually personally reached out to him. One of my friends recommended, looking at his profile and this podcast he does, which is called Breathe In Podcast, which we'll make sure to send all the links after we're done with this show. But his name is Gunnar Esiason, and I hope I pronounced that. Did I pronounce that right, Gunnar?
Yep, you got that. You got that perfect.
Awesome.
It's a lot of vowels. I know it's tough for some people.
Yeah, so Gunnar. Go on, Ann.
I was right.
you were. So Gunnar, 27-year-old, he was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis at the age of 2. If you aren't familiar with cystic fibrosis, which we may say also call it CF, it's a genetic disease that impacts their respiratory and digestive systems. However, Gunnar has also done some great things. Not only was he a high school student athlete and a graduate of Boston College, which is part of my neck of the woods, but he's also has become an advocate for the Boomer Esiason Foundation. He has had 3 different cystic fibrosis centers, I believe, named after him. Is that right, Gunnar?
Yep, the only Gunnar Esiason now I know of.
Oh, there we go.
That's awesome. That's good stuff.
And, he's kind of just been a public figure in the community, and I think it's just exciting to have him on the show. So welcome, Gunnar, and let's get to it.
Yeah. Hey, guys. I'm Gunnar Esiason, as Seth pointed out. I'm 27, living with cystic fibrosis. And yes, I was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis at age 2, after actually being misdiagnosed negative right after birth. So I went 2 years without a diagnosis. And I can't say I remember those days very much. It was definitely probably a little difficult with my parents back then. But since then, my parents started the Boomer Esiason Foundation in 1993. So we've been doing this for about 25 years now. And in that 25-year span, we've raised probably close to $140 million in the fight against cystic fibrosis. And we're really starting to see some dividends pay towards what we've done. We're starting to get some real game-changing medications in the cystic fibrosis sector. It goes out to all of our donors, our volunteers, our staff, the Boomer Esiason Foundation, as well as the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, to really getting us to where we are today.
That's incredible.
Wow. That's awesome. That's so great. But before we hop into it, I got to ask you, were you an Anna's Taqueria fan when you went to Boston College?
Was I an Anna's Taqueria fan? Wow. I haven't heard that in a long time.
Yes.
Don't
let me down.
It's college. You'd eat anything that's in front of you, right? Anything that's fried or greasy, you'll eat it, right? So I suppose I was somewhat of a fan. Like I said, I went to Boston College. I lived in Boston for 4 years. I'm definitely on Team Boston compared to New York, even though I live in New York now. And I love my 4 years at BC, man. I really did.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm from outside of Boston, 30 minutes west, but always a big fan. Boston sports, you either love it or, in Ann's case, you hate Tom Brady, but it's all good.
I am an Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay Packer girl, hardcore. So Seth and I have it's going to be a rough football season for us this year.
I'm a huge Packer fan as well. I actually own 2 shares. So I'm an NFL owner by virtue of being owning part of the Packers. I'm a huge Packers fan. When I was little, I thought the G on the helmet stood for Gunner. So I became a huge
Gunner.
Packers fan.
Gunner, I knew I liked you. We actually have our own shares as well. I'm going to 2 Packer games this season. I'm super excited. So
cool.
Seth, I knew I liked this guy. Super knew I liked him.
Maybe, I'll, just, you,
You sound like you're from Wisconsin. I'm actually looking forward to the Packers visiting the Jets this year in December, so I'm looking forward to your
Nice. I actually live in Utah, so which is crazy, but going out to Lambeau for opening, and then I'm going to go to the Vikings game when they're at Minneapolis, so that'll be cool. So, good.
Cool.
Oh, jeez. Cool. I might as well just hop off the phone, you know, get off this right now. I'm always outnumbered, Ann, but...
I'm going to start my own Green Bay podcast, and Gunnar will be my first guest. Jeez for Gunnar.
Jeez. That's what I thought. I was really little.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, well, Gunnar, I mean, you mentioned how there's been a lot of great work going on in the cystic fibrosis community, and you even mentioned in your recent e-newsletter about, you know, trying to make the proper changes similar to the, I believe you mentioned like the AIDS kind of campaign that jump started. And, you know, for me, I agree 100% where not only I think in the cystic fibrosis community, but also coming from a family and community impacted by genetic disease, my thing is let's make it bigger than, you know, that campaign. Let's make it bigger than anything else and just build that coalition. But, you know, what are your thoughts when it comes to collaborating with other genetic diseases, other rare diseases, and how can we make it happen?
Well, you know, when we talk about rare disease, we're talking about, you know, a stronger community compared to the, you know, the quote unquote rare diseases. You know, obviously there's only so many people living with a rare disease, what we call it one. And as a group, we're stronger, you know, however many rare diseases there are in the United States or worldwide, you put those people together and you have a large army. You have a very formidable foe within the not only the political sector, but also, you know, the social sector, as well as community involvement and patient interaction. You know, I think that people living with not only genetic illnesses, but, you know, chronic illness as a whole can learn a lot from talking to each other and experiences that people go through. I would be naive to think that my experience as a cystic fibrosis patient would be, you know, totally different from someone else. You know, that's just simply not the case. You know, we go through a lot of the same motions. We have to go to the clinic, you know, every so often. We deal with, you know, mundane medication refills through, you know, specialty pharmacies, through dealing with insurance. You know, these are all things that we all know very well just by virtue of being chronically ill. And I think these shared experiences, as much as I was talking about in a blog post about a week ago or so, it is important to use in a productive way. You know, we always say that patients are an expert within their own illness, right? You know, I consider myself an expert within cystic fibrosis, and I don't have to have a PhD or an MD attached to my name. I know what I'm living with. I've lived with it for 27 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I while I certainly value you know, my doctor's opinions, you know, medical staff, researchers, things like that, I also know what I need as a person as a human being. And I'm either going to get it and survive or I'm not. And I hold it upon myself to really get out there and dig into the real nitty gritty of cystic fibrosis and learn as much about it as I can, so that when push does come to shove and I need to make a decision about my health, I'm prepared to do so. And I think it's important for people with all chronic illnesses to be able to do that and to feel comfortable in the decisions they're making, you know, within their own community, as well as the larger rare disease space as well.
Yeah.
I think that's really important.
Yeah. No, I was just going to echo that as well. I mean, I think that the challenges that I've noticed, and I'm sure both you could agree, is when we try to make that change, right? And then people have different opinions, and then push come to shove, we forget about that larger vision of what is our reason behind the change, which is better supporting the patients, better supporting the caregivers, making sure that people's quality of life is improved. But I've seen over and over again about different organizations splitting up because of just disagreements or not being able to work together because of that whole competitive mindset. So, you know, again, I wish it was easier said than done to just say, hey, you know, you're impacted by this genetic disease, so am I. Let's figure out something that's going to support both of our communities as well as others and build that coalition. Because like you said, Gunnar, we're an army, you know, we're an army of these people impacted by a rare disease, a chronic illness. and we're stronger together mm-hmm. than we are as individuals.
You know, I certainly agree, but at the same time, you know, individual survivability mm-hmm. is the name of the game, right? You have to be able to survive what you're dealing with first and foremost, right? You have to take care of yourself before you can start worrying about other people, because if you can't take care of your own, you know, your own stuff, you know, how can you tell people to do what they do or lead people in the direction to be successful themselves? So I think individual survivability is ultimately the number one priority. Moving from there, it kind of umbrellas out, right? Then I look at cystic fibrosis as my priority. You know, my number one goal in life is to rid the world of cystic fibrosis, whether regardless of what role I'm playing in it, that's just really my goal in life. Then from there, we can talk about rare disease. You know, as soon as cystic fibrosis is conquered, you know, I can you know, put more effort into the rare disease space. But if we're talking as a group, as a community together, then it's important to be, okay, now we're a rare disease, right? All of us together have similar needs, but and that's when it's appropriate to talk about the rare disease coalition, mm-hmm. what you're sort of speaking of. But at the end of the day, my goal is to rid the world of cystic fibrosis and ultimately survive as a human.
I really like that, Gunnar, and I think it's a really important aspect that has made me think a little bit as you're saying. And I feel like, you know, I do that a lot. So I have a son with a rare disease, and, you know, we focus a lot on his disease and getting research for him. And then I broadened out to mm-hmm. others, but then I still keep coming back because that's the number one priority. You know, and I'm the same way. Like, that's my number one priority. That's what I want to focus on. And I'm teaching him the same thing too. Like, you have to know this. And I like what you said earlier about educating yourself so that you can make those decisions. I think sometimes we just automatically default to what a clinician says or what someone else says because they are, you know, they have the degree or whatever, the more experience, but it's really learning about what it is you're fighting so that you can stand up for yourself. And even from a caregiver, you know, I give these talks on put your oxygen mask on first and take care of yourself when I'm probably the last person doing that. And I had to take a step back and be like, I got to practice what I preach. This is what we're doing. And so mm-hmm. I really like this whole independence and, you know, focusing on the thing that's most important to you, because then it's a spiral effect. You knock one thing out and the others were going to follow. Gunnar, you had this really great article that I wanted to talk about. Can we talk about the article that you just posted that I got in my email about the valuing your time alone?
Yes.
To cope? Uh-huh. Because mm-hmm. I really like that. Can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah. So another blog that I wrote about using alone time to cope with my cystic fibrosis. You know, I think cystic fibrosis care is just so involved and so, you know, I have to invest so much time into it. You know, I'm doing 4 hours of, you know, inhaler treatments or, you know, physical therapy a day. I have my 7 hours of feet tube overnight. I have 50, you know, oral pills. There's just a lot of time that goes into it. Plus I have to be, you know, I got to work my social life, my work life, you know, and everything else in between. And it's important to find time for me. You know, I want to find time for me to really just dissolve from the world, just to get away, you know, and I do like spending my time on my own, simply just to use it as a way to back away from cystic fibrosis, right? Because not only am I living with it, I'm also working in cystic fibrosis by virtue of being an advocate for the Boomer Science Foundation and also traveling to these children's clinics across the country. You know, I spend so much time involved in cystic fibrosis. I need to find Gunner time as well, just so I can get away from it, right? I need to be a human being as well as a patient.
I really like that. One of the things you talked about in your article was just right at the beginning about, like, have you taken your enzymes? Did you refill mm-hmm. your prescriptions? And so my son is 14 and he mm-hmm. gave a talk at a rare disease symposium a year and a half ago. And he was talking about being a teenager with a rare disease. And he said, one of the downfalls was my mom consistently asking me if I've taken my meds. And I was like, oh gosh. So when I read your article, I was like, okay, here we go.
So I mean,
I love that. So I was like, how do you make that, you know, where's that balance of, you know, what advice would you be giving to teens and those young adults that are trying to figure this out? Because yeah, parents were hovering.
Yeah. I mean, I always say that the cystic fibrosis mom is the most empowered person in the entire history of the world. And I'm sure the same could be said about any other rare disease as well. But, you know, my parents have just been breathing down my neck for years about taking my medications and doing everything involved with cystic fibrosis that, you know, I can wake up in the middle of the night and I'm like, oh my God, did I take my pills or whatever? And I always say that, you know, at least this is how it works in cystic fibrosis care. We transition from pediatric care to adult care by the time we're 18, 19, 20 years old. And I always say that's the greatest time in a cystic fibrosis patient's life because you get to cut out the middleman, right?
Sure.
And the middleman is the parents, right? As soon as you transition to adult care and cystic fibrosis, really as soon as you turn 18, the doctor's having conversations with you, the person, the patient, not your parents, right? And that's a very empowering moment for people with whatever chronic illness. In my experience, cystic fibrosis, because all of a sudden it's like, okay, the care decisions are now mine entirely. I mean, my parents are my number one and two advisor. They always will be for the rest of eternity. I always value my mom and dad's opinion more so than anyone else in the world. But I think it's important for teens to begin to grasp care in their own way and however possible and at whatever pace they're comfortable with, right? Whether that means learning how to deal with insurance, learning how to refill prescriptions from the pharmacy, learning how to set up medications, learning how to sterilize things, learning how to deal with hospital staff, learning how to advocate for oneself, whether it's in school, on a athletic team, at camp or wherever. The person with cystic, or in my case, cystic fibrosis, has to learn how to speak up for himself, because whether or not we get sick, the world is going to keep spinning, right?
Sure.
So we have to be able to interject ourselves in that world and be a part of society in a productive way. And I think that's what I was really getting at with the beginning of that blog post about finding alone time. And I sort of ended up with, you know, yeah, that takes a lot of effort. Maybe I need to be my own self for a few hours every week or so.
Well, and I really like that, because I feel like even patients who are getting diagnosed as an adult, it's a process that they're going through. You know, maybe the spouse mm-hmm. is taking that on, and it's mm-hmm. really learning to, like you said, the world moves on. And so it's creating that space around you that you can, mm-hmm. you know, cope on your own and whatnot.
Yeah. You know, I always say that to be born with cystic fibrosis, you know, I have no other normal. You know, I've never known what it's like to take a full breath of air. I've always just known cystic fibrosis, right? So I've lived with it my entire life. I've had 27 years of experience of living with it and 27 years of experience of learning how to deal with it. You know, people who are diagnosed later in life, the learning curve is very, very steep, especially okay. with cystic fibrosis. You know, you're seeing people with cystic fibrosis being diagnosed later in life just by virtue of genetic testing becoming more enhanced or whatever. And their learning curve is very steep. You know, same thing with someone who's diagnosed with cancer when they're 50 years old. You know, they don't know how to deal with insurance. They don't know how to deal with, you know, medical staff. They don't know the loopholes that we know. That those things are just so, you know, so convoluted, so complex. And in a lot of ways, I think that people with cystic fibrosis, by virtue of being born with the illness, you know, we are given a head start of the rest of humanity just by virtue of, you know, being able to deal with these complex things throughout our entire lives.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And just to kind of go off that, Gunners, you know, you do make a great point of you kind of grow, you know, you definitely grow up a lot faster. You mature a lot faster than your friends. And I mean, at least from my own experience, yes, I am lucky enough to say I'm pre-symptomatic, but I did test positive for Huntington's disease at the age of 20. But I grew up with a mom having it, and seeing her slow deteriorate mm-hmm. kind of did mm-hmm. prepare me in a way for what my life could end up being like and what my options were, which I'm sure similar to you is, hey, I cannot do anything about it and just let it run my life, or I can just, mm-hmm. you know, use it as motivation and fight back and be an advocate and get involved. But for those out there who I've talked with, they're like, you know, Seth, how do you become an advocate, or how do you, you know, share your story and be an inspiration to others? You know, I sometimes have trouble being like, I just say, hey, listen, I just do it because I want to help other people and I want to support others. But do you have any advice when people in the cystic fibrosis community come up to you and say, Gunner, like, you're a public figure here, how can I be like you, or how can I, you know, take certain steps to make a change in the community?
Well, the first thing I always say is I'm not much different from them. You know, I deal with the same BS that any other cystic fibrosis patient's going to deal with. You know, I have to wake up extra early and do my medications just like they're doing. And I think the number one part about advocating for one's disease or oneself is to just really understand what you're talking about, right? And you also have to figure out what you need as a patient in person, right? You know, you're not going to be able to advocate for the change in the disease or the change in, you know, lifestyle without knowing what you want or need. And there's a very difference. There's a very big difference between knowing what you want and knowing what you need. And I think that the first step is figuring that out. The second step is, okay, how can I apply those things to the world, to the general population, and is sharing my story the appropriate way to do that? And when I say sharing your story, I don't mean going out there, going to the doctor, taking a picture of your X-ray and putting that on the internet. That doesn't do anything, right? Mm-hmm. Sharing your medical history with the internet does not do anything. If anything, you become liable for genetic discrimination against your personal medical history by virtue of putting that kind of thing.
Yeah.
What I'm talking about is using your story to get out there and inspire others and inspire change from the grassroots, right? You just got to talk to people about your story. You know, I take my enzymes in front of other people when I'm out to eat because, you know, by virtue of being pancreatic insufficient, you know, I need my digestive enzymes to help digest food. And, you know, that's one way that I can share my story. People see me taking enzymes. Gunner, what are those? Well, they're enzymes. They help me digest my food. You've already answered a question, right? You've already started to spread your story, and now somebody has more knowledge than they did 5-10 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. Right? Small little things like that ultimately build up. They're like little building blocks. And as you do it more and more frequently, you become more comfortable sharing your story and reaching others.
I really like that a lot.
Yeah. Well, let's there's another column or another blog post that Anne really liked. And I'll let her dive into this one. It's a column from Perspective, which, you know, one day when I get to, you know, get a girlfriend and all that fun stuff, I will be able to relate a little bit more. But, you know, bring us and tell us what you loved about that article.
Well, you know, Gunnar, I really loved when I saw that you had posted that it was going to start. And then when I was reading it earlier today, I thought how important it was for this complete perspective of it. And I don't see this anywhere else. And so I thought it was innovative and needed, and really strongly focused on the needed part, because we always focus on the patient, and especially like within, you know, like your age bracket or whatnot, there's relationships going on, you know, how do those start? When do you tell somebody you're dating? Oh, P.S. I also deal with this every day type of thing. You know, how does that come up? But so I really felt like this was such an important topic, and I hope she does a lot more, because I really liked it, not only from her professional perspective, but just this. So just, I kind of just wanted to know, like, how did this come up in conversation of like, hey, how do we start this? Should we do this? Because I think it's fantastic what you're doing.
Yeah. So I've been dating my girlfriend Darcy now for, I guess, probably close to 3 years. The first time we went on a date, it was very apparent that I had cystic fibrosis because I was on intravenous antibiotics. So, you know, there was no hiding it. And really, I mean, if you just, I guess in this day and age, you Google the person you're going to date anyways, you know, you find Gunnar size and you'll figure out that I have CF one way or another. But you know, I always think it's important to be, open and trustworthy in a relationship, because after all, every relationship is built around trust, right? So I think it's important to give, you know, a potential significant other, you know, the much needed information. You don't want to be holding a secret over somebody or feeling like, you know, you have something terrible to tell someone. You know, cystic fibrosis is a part of me, and any girl that I'm going to date, and in this case, my girlfriend, you know, she's either going to, you know, take to it or she's not. And that's information that I need to know, because I need to know whether or not she's going to be supportive of me or she's going to be toxic. And in this case, my girlfriend is incredibly supportive of me. You know, she's a trained social worker, psychotherapist. So she does like to kind of, you know, ask these, you know, really deep invested questions, which is fine. You know, it's all power to her. You know, I actually forget when this came up, but, my girlfriend's been very involved, in cystic fibrosis events through the Boomer Science Foundation. I bring her with me, to some of the talks or motivational, you know, visits that I'll do at CF clinics around the country, or with, you know, medical staff, caretakers, whomever, because I know she has not only an important perspective to give by virtue of being my girlfriend, but also a good professional perspective to give by being a mental health worker. And cystic fibrosis, mental health is something that is being stressed upon the community right now. It's something that growing up, it was never treated in my personal case, at least. And it, you know, it's fair to say that it's probably pretty common community wide. really within the past 5 or so years, Cystic Fibrosis Foundation has started to stress to the clinics, okay, you have to address mental health in these patients because you've overlooked it for far too long. And right. Now the point where I actually consider cystic fibrosis care to have three main parts. There's respiratory care, digestive care, or, you know, nutrition, diet, whatever. And then the third part is mental health. If I can excel in all three of those areas, my health will be pretty good or the decline will be a lot slower. You know, that's kind of what I'm looking at. If one of those three things is lacking, then my overall health will lack as well. So I think my girlfriend really understood that there's a need for this, for someone to be speaking candidly about mental health in cystic fibrosis. So I invited her to take this column on my blog. I said, you know, you're free to use, you know, certain examples that I've been through in my life, because, you know, I'm not Superman. I deal with issues just like everyone else. I have anxieties and stress just, you know, around my medical life, just like, you know, every other patient in the history of the world has ever lived through. You just got to run it by me first, because, you know, some things are more appropriate right. than others. But, you know, I think she's definitely, she's definitely struck a chord here. And I'm really excited to see where she takes the column. But I also know that it's important for other people with cystic fibrosis to see, you know, hey, Gunnar does have a girlfriend. Maybe I can have a girlfriend too one day. Or, you know, maybe Gunnar is struggling with mental health and he talked to his care team about it. You know, maybe I can do that as well, too.
Well, and I really – oh, go ahead,
Seth. I was just going to say that to me right there, Gunnar. I want to, you know, I need to find a girlfriend, too. So,
gosh,
if you
please.
Know, if you know of anyone, just to let me know. But, no, it is a challenge, even for me, because I'm always thinking, like, do I tell them on the first date? Do I tell them on the second? Because, yes, I don't – even though I'm not showing symptoms, it still mentally impacts me and you know – even it's like one of those like invisible things. I may not show it, but like mentally it's always going to be in my mind. And you're right though. It's like, you do have to be open and trustworthy. And I don't want to beat around the bush, but I also don't want to look at me and right away by, oh, here's mm-hmm. Seth with Huntington's disease. But similar to you, if you look me up, there's no other Seth Rotberg on Google, where you'll see right away, oh yeah, he does work in Huntington's disease. Oh yeah, he's tested positive. But I definitely will admit, you know, I've struggled with, when do I tell them? There's not perfect timing, but I do find it important just to, like, be open and honest with them.
Yeah, I mean, let's put it this way. I've had successes and failures in both ways. You know, my go-to used to be when I was right out of college and I started dating was I would put my, you know, my little pill pack of enzymes on the, you know, on the dinner table or on the bar whenever I'd take a girl out on a date. And right before the food came or whatever, I would, you know, start popping pills. And, of course, the question would come. That's sort of how I led into the question.
That's a good icebreaker.
You learn, like, little things like that along the way. You know, in my case, I have the prop to work with. I always called them the prop in that case. But I always looked at dates as, like, a job interview, right? You're trying to interview the potential girlfriend, and they're trying to interview you to see if you have a match. And that's really just kind of how I handled it. And I always did like to be upfront about it. You know, if it wasn't the first date, then, you know, the second or third date, because, you know, you really want to at least be fair to the other person as well. You don't, you know, I never wanted to spring that upon someone.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a great idea, Seth. You just need to look at it that way. And just going back to your article, like, you know, even the section on the PTSD. So I have a really good friend over in the UK named mm-hmm. Thomas that has CF. And you know, he actually just put out an article about how he's been dealing with, you know, like the mental stress and what the toll it's taken on his own health. And uh-huh. So I love this. And so I'm going to be sending this to him to be like, listen, you like you need to follow this. And so I applaud you for what you're doing and bringing her on to, you know, look at that avenue as part of the total caregiver, you know, package as far as, you know, providing for your own care.
You know, our credo at the Boomer Science Foundation is to get, or part of it rather, is to give a voice to everyone within the community. And, you know, everyone has a varying opinion about a number of things, but our idea is really just to get as much information out there as possible, and then people to sort of pick and choose what they want to hear, see, and read. And, you know, if people see this as, you know, mental health is something that we're stressing, is something that Cystic Fibrosis Foundation is stressing, and then, you know, Cystic Fibrosis Clinical Care Network is stressing, you know, then maybe this is something that people should pick up on, and they're free to go on and check it out and see what they can get from it.
Agree. And I think putting it out there, there's probably a lot of patients out there that are struggling with this, but they maybe not know how to voice it. And so seeing you put it there is for them is, you know, them being acknowledged that it's real And it's, you know, a matter that really needs to be addressed. So again, kudos to what you guys are doing.
That's certainly the hope.
Great.
Well, let's wrap this up. We have a few, what we call like our random questions, I guess, Anne.
Sure.
that we throw at you. So I'm going to start. So you mentioned about having your, you know, time for yourself. So what's your favorite thing to do besides, you know, conquering the world?
Besides conquering the world. I love playing ice hockey. That's probably my go-to thing. I actually coach high school ice hockey here on Long Island. That's probably one of my favorite things to do. Or I'm actually a big gamer. I love playing video games.
What's your favorite one? Favorite video game?
Right now I'm totally hooked in the Fortnite craze.
Okay. Nice. That's a big one right there. Let me know if you ever play with Drake. I know he plays.
You'll be the first to know.
Perfect. Yeah, my son does Fortnite and PUBG. That's what comes consistently at our house. Hey, what's your favorite NHL team?
My favorite NHL team is the New York Rangers.
Not the Bruins? Come on.
Not the Bruins. Seriously? Nope, it's not the Bruins.
Gunnar, I knew I liked you. I am a
Wait, you're a Rangers fan?
I am a Rangers. So it's a long story, but I had to choose a team 3 years ago. I'm in Utah. We don't have any.
Yeah, you guys don't
teams,
have any
right?
teams except for the Jazz.
Yeah, I know. And I had to focus, and I looked, and I liked the original, and I went with Rangers. And I'm gonna say it's because The Miracle was one of my favorite movies, and so that's how I went. This is how I come to sports. Hey, Gunnar, I know you're a huge reader. What's one of your favorite books you've read lately?
My favorite book of all time is Fearless by Eric Plehm. It's about the Navy SEAL Adam Brown and his life struggling through addiction to recreational drugs, and how he overcame that to become a Navy SEAL and made his way to be a SEAL Team 6 guy. And it's about his relationship with his wife and how his wife, you know, basically led him through sobriety to becoming a Navy SEAL. It's a really powerful book.
Oh, and awesome. It's called Fearless?
Yeah, Fearless.
Okay, cool. I'll have to check it out. I have a really random question for you.
Yeah, uh-huh.
This is something I've been thinking about nonstop for a few days that I saw on your Twitter feed. I want to know more about Oreos and peanut butter together. Like, this is, like, something
Oreos
I've been thinking about. Like, how did this come about? Is it amazing? Because it sounds amazing.
I forget where I'm definitely not innovative enough to have discovered it my own. I the first time I did it was in college. Someone either told me about it or I forget how I figured it out. But yeah, dipping Oreos into like a jar of peanut butter. It's got to be creamy peanut butter. Can't
creamy.
Be chunky.
Okay.
It's got to be
creamy
peanut butter. And cystic fibrosis patients, we need more fat, more protein. So peanut butter is perfect for us.
Perfect.
And some of our medications we have to have with, a high fat snack just so our bodies can metabolize the medications. So my go-to for those kind of medications or whenever I need a fatty snack, it's Oreos and peanut butter. And
I love this. I love
it. It's super filling. So I never go more than like 7 or 8 of them. As you can imagine, it's really filling, but it's definitely a tasty snack.
I'm going to have to try this.
I saw that. I know. I saw that. And I'm like, wait, what have I been missing out on my whole life?
Yeah. As soon as you try it, I mean, every person I've ever presented it to, I guess, unless you're allergic to peanuts or a diabetic, I guess. It's definitely a very friendly snack.
I love it. You're gonna start a new craze here.
I know. Jeez, I'm gonna start promoting it.
Yeah,
peanut butter.
By all means.
Awesome.
I love
it. Hey, well, thank you again, Gunnar, for joining us and for taking some time to connect and share your experiences.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate it. You know, from one podcaster to another, I always like to see people talking about chronic illness on the internet. So here we are doing that together. I wish you guys all the luck with the show.
Yes, we appreciate it. And we'll make sure to add links to, you know, the foundation and your podcast and, you know, even your own personal website, just so if people want to connect with you personally or professionally, they know how to get in touch with you. And as well as, like I said, I mean, I love the podcast, so continue to do big things in life.
We will
Thanks,
try our
Gunnar.
Best. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, take care.
Big thanks to Gunnar for joining Seth and I today. He's doing incredible work in the cystic fibrosis community. Make sure you're following his podcast called Breathe In. You can find it on iTunes. You can also read more about Gunnar at gunnaresiason.com and follow the work he's doing. And for more information on the Boomer Esiason Foundation, just go to esiason.org. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.